Coffinville.com radio, broadcasting live from the middle of the biggest geographic feature on planet Gaia, the Pacific Ocean. We're here in Dolphinville celebrating what it's like to be alive here in paradise, where reality is what we choose to believe it is. This is a new frequency band of information that we're putting out here, a pulse point at 19.5 degrees here on the planet, and going out to connect people with the idea that we're not alone in this biosphere as the only intelligent species on planet Gaia. We're one of many, and the most obvious one that we're here to acknowledge, of course, is the cetaceans being the dolphins and the whales. This is going to be an experiment in time and space where we invite you to join us in what it's like to feel differently, to be differently, to actually enter into realms of consciousness that may be new or may be familiar, but we are not alone. Remember that. This week we have an invited guest, somebody who lives here in Dolphinville. She's been here almost as long as I have. I think we arrived almost the same time, a little more than six years ago. And we were both kind of like drawn for different reasons, but ended up for being here the same reason. We've connected on various levels, and I'm happy to have as my guest today, Milena. Thank you for being my guest today, Milena, here.
Aloha, Douglas. Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yes. Milena, as you'll learn, is somebody who is a primary founder of what is called the Family of the Dolphins, the Hawaiian language equivalent is Kaya Ohana Onaya. Kaya Ohana Onaya.
Ka Ohana Onaya. Close.
Thank you. My tang all got tangled up there. Kaya Ohana Onaya means the Family of the Dolphins, and it's a very special kind of spiritual togetherness. That
it's actually a spiritual organization that was formed for various reasons, and one of the most primary reasons it was formed was to acknowledge that we honor the cetaceans, the whales and the dolphins, as our spiritual family, and it's also to protect their rights to continue to be able to interact with us and us with them.
I think it's important to that acknowledgement from the human standpoint, and this is where we're going to share some of the stories today that Milena and her husband Michael have been sharing with people for the last 6+ years as part of their organization, the Family of the Dolphins. You can check out their organization online. The website is thefamilyofthedolphins.org, O-R-G. And that'll give you some insight into what they're doing there. There's another new site that's being born now. What's the name of that site, Milena?
Sunlight on Water.
And Sunlight on Water is more or less just kind of a site devoted to the boat and taking people out on the boats to have this experience. It's both a public and private kind of enterprise, the private one being for people who are more into the in-depth spiritual journeys, and we're going to get into some of those things. But first, let me remind everybody why we're here and how we're here. Randy at photon.net has been very generous with his time and floating up this wave band of information that goes out into the Internet. We've managed to accumulate an audience that reaches all over the world. And several, 300 people have signed up to become Dolphinville members. It hasn't been an advertised forum. It just seems to be something that people have found on their own. And it's a growing family. The idea of Dolphinville was to provide some kind of an exchange or a terminal of information that people can check in on what the latest is going on and also communicate with one another. These radio shows are here as a service to just bring out information, allow people to get in touch with what it's like to be here, because many of us who live here on the Big Island have come to recognize that there's a new state of being that's now available to us, and we'll share what that means in these shows, starting with this one today. So getting back to who Milena is and how long she's been here, she was drawn here from, let's say, more of a traditional lifestyle, family and whatnot, growing up on the east coast of the country in Atlanta, Georgia, Southern Belt, if I ever did see one. And maybe you can share with us a little bit of the experience of what led you here initially and then what happened once you got here that impacted your life so richly.
Well, it's definitely been a life-changing journey. In Atlanta, I had a very traditional lifestyle, family, regular, 9-to-5 kind of job. But also, 12 years ago, due to some circumstances, I was really call to awaken and to begin to figure out who I was and why I was.
And the spiritual path that everybody...
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And that journey led me to the Avalon Institute, where I trained with Jim Self, who is a wonderful master teacher, and worked with him for many years on a very intensive level. And he brought a group of us to Hawaii about seven or eight years ago, mm-hmm. and we came to spend a week to swim with the dolphins. And
so the Avalon Institute is now, I think, located and centered in Sedona, or no, excuse me, in Mount Shasta, is that correct?
No, they were in Chico, and I don't know that the Institute is still up and running. They have since moved on, yes.
Okay, I've seen some references to them with Mount Shasta. But what was the nature of that organization? What was the primary goals of the Avalon Institute?
It was a place to, they taught spiritual healing and how to awaken your clairvoyant centers. And it's, but all of that is just a journey to, in within yourself to heal and become who you are. Mm-hmm. It was very in-depth.
And Jim had heard about the dolphins as something that assisted in this?
He was connected with Lisa French, who has the Kona Psychic Institute here at that time, or she did, and which is now the Clairvoyant Center of Hawaii, I believe is what she calls it. And Lisa lived here, and so they connected. So we came to swim with the dolphins, and oh boy, did the journey begin there.
Mm-hmm. So your first encounter was from a boat seeing the dolphins?
Actually, in Kealakekua Bay, we swam out from shore the very first time.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a magical experience that is. And for those of you who don't know, that's a very special place, not only on the Big Island. It's where Captain Cook first sailed in to meet the Hawaiian Islands. Captain Cook is the model for Captain James T. Kirk of the Starship Enterprise, to go where no man has gone before. And in effect, Captain Cook came in, he discovered the islands, and then within 6 months was discovering other dimensional beings as he left the planet. Courtesy of the Hawaiian tradition.
Yeah, interesting history there if anyone's interested in looking that up.
Really is. So Kealakekua has always been known, the translation I believe, is Pathway to the Gods.
Exactly.
Yeah, so there's a portal, and a number of people have noticed that. So it's no mistake that somebody on the spiritual horizon would take his group to interact at that particular juncture. So what was your experience that time?
Well, it was fabulous, and there was a group of us, and we went into the water on our first day, and it was an amazing thing. There was this pod of dolphins, and there were must have been 16 of us, I think, and there were dolphins everywhere, but not everybody in the group saw the dolphins, which I thought was fascinating.
Mm-hmm. You were together, and yet only a few people or a certain segment.
Right, actually saw them.
Mm-hmm.
So we have come to know them to be very interdimensional beings, mm-hmm. as we are as well. It's just that they're aware of it, and we're a little slower to catch up.
Mm-hmm. They're helping us with these kinds of things.
Exactly.
But so you were one of the ones that saw them, obviously.
Yes. And then we also we did one day on the boat, and that was the boat that Michael ran, you know, which was at that time the Lana Kila, mm-hmm. which was the first and the only boat here that did dolphin swims during those period of times.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I first met my beloved.
Yes, and he's still the captain of the Lana Kila, although it's not called that any longer. It's undergone a couple of incarnations. It's a commercial book that no longer does the dolphin swims,
mm-hmm.
but it does have a soft spot in everybody's heart because it was, as I called, the Lexus of the dolphin tour boats, beautiful catamaran that it would host up to 50 people or nearly a mountain. And that was always a grand experience. And people would go out on the water and be able to lay in the low-hanging nets a few feet above the water, and the dolphins loved that boat, and they'd come right underneath, and they still do. But the difference is that people were getting off the boats then. So that first encounter, let's go back to that. You were not a powerful swimmer. Did you have a life vest and a swim assistant to get you out there?
I used a snorkel vest at that
mm-hmm.
time. Yes,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, going into the ocean sometimes, particularly in the beginning, can be an overwhelming experience for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, it still is. And Kealakekua Bay is a formidable entrance even today. The waves crashing and a little bit of a distance to get out to an area where the dolphins may be coming in. So you're paddling out, probably a little fear and trepidation going out into the ocean if that was your first trip out into that deep water.
Almost. I had had an experience the day before because we were trying on our snorkel gear at Kahulu Beach, and I got caught in the riptide of my very first day in the water.
Okay.
Yeah, so I had a little fear to overcome.
Mm-hmm. The power of the ocean made itself known.
Oh, yes. And most of us a lot of us have had past lives where, unfortunately, we left this planet by way of the ocean.
I think we all have some reminiscence of that.
Yes.
It must be, if we believe as we do, that we've had several go-rounds, I'm sure one of them had an encounter with water after all.
But that week was a very intensive week, and it was a lot of things going on, and the dolphins were a part of that, of course. And then I went back to Atlanta after that week, and then I came back 6 months later with Jim and another group. And that time was really the big turning point. That trip, we went to the volcano as well, and we were hiking across the caldera. And about halfway across the caldera, Pele came in and said, "You should come here for a couple months to learn how to be."
That was very clear, it sounds like.
Oh, she always speaks to me very explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't mince words.
Mm-hmm. And that comes as a clear voice or some light reflection? Or how does it appear to you?
At that time, it was a clear voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's been some extraordinary experiences in the caldera. I've witnessed rainbows and mists and thunder and all kinds of light balls down there. So a lot of people report it very powerful. I feel it is the very center. Some people even call it the womb of Madame Pele right there at the caldera. So you went anticipating having an experience because you were already trained yourself to be a sensitive.
Yes, but of course you never know what to expect. So with that, I took her advice and went back to Atlanta after that and put everything into place to come here. And at that point in time, my marriage of 23 years dissolved, and put my daughter in college, and I took a leave of absence, and I thought I was coming to stay 2 months. Well, I came for 2 months and never left.
I think I've heard that story before, too, you know.
Yeah, it's a frequent one we hear here.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's something very infective about this big island, and I think it's been noted that, you know, it embraces some people, but this is readily, it spits people out, too.
Very, very powerful place, and it's, you know, it is the land of Lemuria, and then Lemuria is the birthing place of mankind. So it's not a place you can hide from yourself.
Hmm.
And that's one of, if you try, it does spit you out indeed.
Mm-hmm. It's also been said that Madame Pele fosters a very, very powerful wave of intention. So they say, be careful what you ask for here. It'll pounce on you before you cross the room. Did you experience that when you were over here? No, you're shaking your head.
No, it was just all meant to be. She's been very kind, and I've been very much in harmony with her and the island. And I was very fortunate 2 weeks after I came, I was adopted by a Hawaiian elder. And he took me under his wing, and he taught me all about Hawaiian Ana, Hawaiian spirituality, and he introduced me to all the spirits of the land. And it was a very powerful, transforming experience for me, and I feel truly blessed.
Hmm. Now, it seems to me that during that period of time, both you and Michael were going through transformations, or did you lead the way and then come back and pull Michael into that, or was it something happened at the same time?
Well, when I came back, he and I connected, you know, on a personal level very deeply, and so I kind of took him along on the journey, sometimes kicking and screaming.
Yeah. Well, for anybody, everybody's information, Michael Yee is the captain, a longtime seaman here in Hawaiian Islands. He's been here for nearly 20 years, first as a championship.
More like 25.
Surfer, 25. And came over here to surf the big waves and became an expert fisherman. He has a background from California, but he looks very Hawaiian and kind of a talks pigeon, and you would certainly just associate him with being somebody who's from the Hawaiian Islands, so he's very comfortable. But when I first met Michael, he was not at all somebody who was sympathetic to the idea humans were connecting with dolphins on anything other than, a physical level. Tell me how that changed and what you witnessed and how he went through his transformation, because it is typical of a lot of people.
Well, as you well know, the dolphins are very heart-centered beings. And when you're around the dolphins, you can't help but open your heart center. And between the dolphins and a little help from me, we got to him.
The big L, love.
It happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a remarkable transition. China Mike, as we call him, Captain China Mike, as I say, he knew everything that needed to be known to be a captain, and riding the waves and knowing the currents and knowing what how to read. But so just under the surface of the water, the dolphins were looming large for him. And there was some of the significant things that happened because, I don't know, there was some kind of like an enlightened opening where he went through several stages of initiation, and the spark in his eye was remarkable. That must have been an incredible time for both of you.
Well, it was, and as I was discovering my connection to the Hawaiian Islands, and I mean, he has already always been. I mean, he's always loved us. He always felt as if he was home mm-hmm. here. And just we've had some remarkable off-the-chart experiences with the spirits and the entities here, and you can't help but be transformed.
There was one story that Michael told me about paddling with the elder to a lava tube and seeing some hieroglyphics. Would you mind if we shared that story?
No, we went into this lava tube, and they're called petroglyphs in Hawaiian lore.
I'm sorry, yes.
And Nalu, who is our elder, and a kapuna, and a kapuna means elder.
And what is the difference between a kapuna and a kahuna?
Well, a kahuna generally is a priest of some sort, and there are different types of kahunas. And some are kahunas of prayer, some are healing, some are just, there's all kinds of manner of kahuna. But they're considered masters in the area.
And do they have like an area that they're masters of? Often they're associated
yes.
with a place, right?
That too, but each one usually has a different craft, a different skill, okay, that's been honed over time and passed down from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm. And this particular kapuna, who is one of the elders, was not recognized as a priest, but somebody who would be more like what, a deacon of the traditions?
Well, yeah, he's an elder. He's and he meets all the criteria of a kahuna, but he would never ever refer to himself as such.
When I went in the art business years ago, we always knew that somebody was serious at their art when they would refer to themselves as a painter or a sculptor, and always say that it was for others to refer to them as an artist.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so there's a certain humility that goes with that.
Right. But we went into that lava tube, and the petroglyph was there, and it took both of them on a journey, and they went back in time, and when they were another time and place, when one was a child and one was the father, and they had taken refuge, actually, in this lava tube. So it's hard to deny, you know, those kind of things when they happen to you. And this island, I mean, Pele will put it right in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like a powerful exchange, because I know from my own knowing of Michael that it was a very, very dynamic kind of thing. That was a turning point. And then he went on for some other significant things. Now, you yourself were going through some Pele initiations. Pele was very powerful, but some of Pele's known sisters also have had some profound effect on you. Can you talk about that?
Well, of course, this Pele, who is the goddess of fire, for those of you who don't know, who makes her home in Kilauea, which is the most active volcano on our planet. And then Poliahu, which is the goddess of ice, and she makes her home on the sacred mountain of Mauna Kea, which is a very powerful, powerful place.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Lilinoe, who is the goddess of the mist and the rainbow. And I have a very special place in my heart for Lilinoe. She and I connect very, very deeply.
Mm-hmm. And again, for people who don't know the geology of the Big Island, we have two of the largest conical shapes on planet Earth, Mauna Kea and Mauna Loa. They go up 14,000 feet nearly and down another 20,000, making the biggest mountains on planet Gaia. And any of you who followed the conical shapes or pyramid shapes know that there's a power in that alone. But this is said to be the peaks of ancient Lemuria as well. So you were attracted to the Lemurian aspect before you knew a little bit about it, or this is all came to you when you got here?
No, it's all been since I first arrived, and actually the Lemurian energy has become really strong in the last 2 years.
Mm.
So it was just my love of the island, my connection of the island, and the spirits that lived here,
mm-hmm.
you know, the first few years I was here. But in the last two, the Lemurian energy has come through very, very strongly, and that's because it's now time for us to remember when we were once Lemurians.
and you say, now it's time. Is that like a sidereal happening, where a seasonal thing where our solar system is passing through a section of the galaxy and there's familiar vibrational frequencies, that kind of timing? Or is it the time of man? What do you mean it's our time?
I believe it to be the time that we have raised our consciousness to a level where we can experience the energies that we once knew in Lemuria. The land of Lemuria, the only law of the land at that time was honor everything. That's it. Very simply. And, of course, you don't have to look very far in our world to see we have a very difficult time with such a simple principle.
Gifted.
Right. But it is my belief and my hope that we are awakening and raising our consciousness to a level that we can embrace what the true essence of Lemuria was about. And her energy is awakening, let's say. And it began in earnest over a year ago. And there's some things that are getting ready to come up. And because the 040404 is coming up, which is supposed to be a very, very powerful time on our planet. And all the portals are supposed to be accessible at that time. And Lemuria will be no exception. See, even though the physical remnants, we believe, of Lemuria sank below the ocean floor, the essence of her actually ascended into the higher realms. And now we have an opportunity to meet with her once again. Mm-hmm. We're calling her home.
As if it never went away, it just became another dimensional realm that was non-physical. Is that what you're suggesting?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And so she's ready to re-embrace us as our vibrational frequencies are now being raised or reattuned to a higher level, and we can start to perceive, just like those early people who couldn't see dolphins, even though they were all around, at a later date, we're starting to be able to see dolphins. So likewise, Lemurians are becoming available to us in our consciousness.
And of course, and the dolphins and the whales are very connected to that energy. I mean, the whales are the ancient ones on our planet, mm-hmm. and they are the keepers of the secrets. They have been been the guardians of the wisdom of Lemuria.
Hmm. It suggested that they themselves were the Lemurians.
As we all are.
Okay. So it's a state of consciousness, a vibrational frequency, which we tie into as a group awareness, a Mother Gaia awareness, if you will, that takes into account honoring everything, starting with the self.
Exactly. And that embraces the whole goddess energy, and that's not God opposed to goddess. It's when the blending of the two, with the god energy being representing the male, the physical, the mental force, and the goddess energy representing the feminine, the spiritual, and the emotional force. You can't have one without the other. It's all one. So, but we have, in our reality, have separated the two for far too long. And the Lemurian energy is about bridging that, and we're awakening to the feminine and masculine energies within each of us. And as we do that and we become whole and complete, then we again can raise our planet to a place where we can go to that place that we all, I think most of us, want to go.
Mm-hmm. And there's a familiarity to it, I believe, because on the spiritual realms, the non-physical realms, I think we've experienced that harmonic balance. Whereas in the physical realm, the dichotomy of being in the polar male-female worlds that have been given to us, which is all changing now. The partnership society is making its return. The possibility of having the polarities simultaneously existing, but in a state of harmony rather than conflict. So this is all unfolding as part of this passage of time.
Well, it gives a whole new meaning to the term sacred union. You know, a sacred union within ourselves, within our partnerships with others, and in our partnership to the planet also. You know, in the planet, she also is the keeper of many secrets and much wisdom from the past. And we have to awaken to that fact so we can access those ancient parts of ourselves.
Much of it starts with the humbling of our own egos so that we can begin to hear and feel these wonderful vibrational frequencies that have information all around us.
Well, and that's true. And then as the Lemurian energy comes in, you know, I felt like it has been, or probably was, abused during its last days on this planet. So some safeguards, I believe, have been put into effect this time. The Lemurian energy will be accessed only through our heart centers. That way, will be no abuse or misuse of that energy, because it is very, very powerful. when we own who we truly are as the guardians of this planet.
Hmm. Well, we talk about gods, we talk about goddesses, higher frequencies of awareness, a coming together of those kind of vibrational frequencies in a new way, so that history is rewriting itself, because history usually is what's been written by the conquerors. Perhaps we're going back to a state of mind that was before all written history, where we can see things differently. But how does God and goddess terms, which are more empirical, compare to, say, what the Hawaiian traditions call amakuas?
Well, amakua has several meanings and is usually misunderstood by non-Hawaiians. Number one, it does mean spiritual guardians. It means ancestral families, but it also means your higher self. So it has all those three meanings, and it depends on the context of the word. And it's all Hawaiian families have an amakua, and that would be something similar to the Native American totems. And the traditional Hawaiian amakua is the honu, which is the turtle, the mano, which is the whale, the io, which is the hawk, and the pueo, which is the owl. And there are others, but those are the four primary ones and the most well-known ones. And for Hawaiian families, one of the amakua represents their spiritual family. When they see that amakua, they know that's their family. And
so
their
manu, which means whale, is a traditional...
Shark.
Shark. Okay, I thought you said whale.
I'm sorry if I did. Mano.
Well, I was a whale is not really one of the traditional amakuas.
Not traditionally, no.
In fact, you were telling me that your kahuna, recognized in the Polynesian tradition, keeping records back to 100,000 years, that the dolphins and whales had not been acknowledged as amakuas in all that time. Is that correct?
Some families have claimed the whale, not the dolphins. That was not traditional. The amakua of the dolphins is my amakua and Michael's amakua. And that has been even sanctified, if you will, in a ceremony done with a kahuna that gives non-Hawaiians a bona fide claim to an amakua.
Well, we can step into that a little bit, because I was witness to part of that ceremony. Let's say, I know that you went and studied with the official kahuna of the place of refuge, which is a sanctified ground. It's been reconstituted and resurrected from an earlier place of refuge. For those who don't know the Hawaiian traditions, perhaps you can explain what a place of refuge is and how it's still significant today and how people use it and such.
Well, once upon a time, it was used as a place where if you were back in the olden times of Hawaii, the laws, the kapu system, if you broke any of the kapus, you were given a sentence. But if you could make your way from wherever you were ahead of the king's men, his army, and make it to a place of refuge, you would be forgiven.
There was one sentence, wasn't it?
I'm sorry?
There was only one sentence.
Death.
Yes. You said you were sentenced. Yeah, you were sentenced to death.
Right. But if you made it to the place of refuge and made it to the priest, you could be absolved and then go back to your family.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, the places are not used as that anymore, but it is a sacred tradition, and the grounds are very sacred, and the Hawaiians hold those places very dear to their hearts.
Mm-hmm. There are whole families that whose whole generation after generation, their whole purpose is to act as the guardians for these sacred temples. And the temples are called heiaus.
Heiaus.
Mm-hmm. And the heiaus are prevalent in this particular park area now. It's a national park where the place of refuge is. They've reconstructed much of the village and one of the major temple areas, which look like a mesa of rocks. But so you did study with the official kahuna of the place of refuge. His name is Lana Kila.
Right. Lana Kila is one of our kumus. Mm-hmm. And he's retired now, but he was the... for many, many, many years, the head kahuna for the place of refuge, which is Pu'u Honu, O Honau.
Mm-hmm. Now, you didn't go into study of the Hawaiian traditions with the idea of linking it to the dolphins, did you? I mean, those are kind of came as parallels, and then they intersected someplace. How did that work?
Right. It's just part of the path. You know, the dolphins were one aspect of it, and the Hawaiian spirituality was another. And it's... the Hawaiian spirituality was a way for me to connect with nature and the elements and just those parts of myself. And then again, that's exactly what the dolphins do. And that's what we do when we take people out to have an experience with the dolphins and the whales. And that is to connect to your higher self, which is God or the source of all things, through nature.
Why do you think it is that there is no tradition of having the dolphins as Amakua in any of the history that we can account for? No chants, no dances, no petroglyphs, no acknowledgement of the dolphins, and yet they're so dynamic. How do you account for that?
I don't really. You know, for them, that was someone who was in the ocean, and of course, you know, they didn't have, I mean, they're, of course, the great ocean voyagers, but they were also competitors who ate their fish.
Well, I know there's been an ongoing battle there. We won't go into some of the contemporary issues that have come up around that with the local fishermen. So I myself was a witness to a beautiful ceremony where the Lanakila actually performed the marriage of you and Michael right there just aside of the sacred grounds.
Right.
And the significant thing about that event, aside from the beauty of it and the swaying palm trees, and this is as romantic as you can get, folks, you had asked or had a sense, you know, that the dolphins would in some way acknowledge what was happening that day. And even though it was an odd time of day for the dolphins, which I believe was around 4 p.m. in the afternoon, 5 p.m. in the afternoon, not a time that we would typically see dolphins from off the shoreline, and yet what happened?
Well, we were. Maybe I should start with that morning. I woke up at 4 that morning, and I spoke to the dolphins and said, you know, we're getting married this afternoon, and we would love for you to be there. And so as we got up and we're getting ready, you know, doing our things in that morning to prepare, I told Michael, I said, the dolphins are coming. And he looked at me, he says, oh, yeah, I know. And he also had the conversation with them. And so we were all gathering, and there was probably 50 of us or more, and we were gathering in the circle just outside the heiau, the temple walls, and someone said, oh, look, the dolphins are here. And they were just jumping and leaping for joy during the whole entire ceremony. It was purely magical, as the whole entire ceremony was. But it meant so much to he and I, since they are our acknowledged Amakua.
Yeah, we all had, as the Hawaiians say, chicken skin when we saw them jumping. As I recall, they were making themselves quite lively as you were, what would say, the equivalent walking up the aisle to meet your betrothed, right?
Exactly. So it was just a perfect validation.
It really was, and a spiritual happening, the acknowledgement of the two of your partnership. It was pretty amazing, and the dolphins being there let all of us know that this was something that was went beyond the typical. Anyway, this is fantastic to be able to share this time and space with you. We're going to take a little break right now and enable the listeners to take a little breather. We're going to listen to some more of the album that has been a theme music for Dolphinville, and one that you play quite often on your boat from Raphael and Sarah. It's called The Calling, and it certainly typifies what we all felt. This is from that album, The Calling. We'll be back in just a few.
Hey.
that's available in the gift store on dolphinville.com. We have a few offerings there for people who want to be able to participate. We are kind of like love donations are there, but we do try to offer some things for people just to keep things going. This is a broadcast that is done from, a labor of love, but it's still nice to be able to know that we have acknowledgement and we can help some people connect up with some products out there as well. It is a free membership to become part of Dolphinville, and we would encourage anybody who is so moved by these shows. We know that the archives are going to be up there. We have a public interface and as well as the private interface, and we do this as a service to everybody to connect them up. We're here talking with Milena, part of the family of the dolphins. Kai Ohana Onaya is the name of the organization, a spiritual organization that was formed actually in 1999. You and Michael weren't married at that time, but you kind of knew that you were being brought together and trained for this purpose. And how has it developed? What was the original vision of the family of the dolphins, and how has that developed and changed since 1999?
Well, it's remained pretty true to its original purpose, and which was to acknowledge the cetacean nation as a nation, and as sentient beings, we recognize the planets and the dolphins and the whales, you know, that we share the planet with, the being sentient beings, and it is just to help people connect to themselves, and we find there's no better way to do that than through nature. And the dolphins and the whales are magical, and so we really don't have to do anything. We just take you out there.
Well, now that sounds real easy, but I know that you hold and set an intention. You make a beautiful prayer and really open up a portal, if you will, to that experience. There's an article on the website that was written by a writer from San Francisco, the writer from the San Francisco Gate, that does a kind of a humorous but very, very lively rendering of one of the experiences. It wasn't always that way. You were sort of took a few people at a time, and then it started growing, and now these are becoming more of a regular thing for you, and you're opening up both the commercial side as well as the private spiritual organizational side of these kinds of journeys and doing it on a more frequent basis. Is that correct?
Right. For the last few years, we've just gone as people have been brought to us. You know, we don't advertise. We do have a website up, but if people find us, then they come to us, and we feel like we take out the people who are meant to be taken out and have that kind of experience. And it has grown quite a bit. And so we have also now just opened up the commercial side of it, because we're being contacted more and more from people who are not necessarily, who don't realize they're on a spiritual path, let's put it that way, and who are but still are seeking the experience in something very unique and unusual, and because we feel like what we do is very special.
Mm-hmm. And so you don't have to go out and don special garments or do a ritual in order to have this experience on the ocean with Michael and Milena. The name of their boat is it Rays of Light on the Water? Is that the literal interpretation?
Mm-hmm. Kukuna Kai, which is Ray of Light on the Ocean.
Mm-hmm. And it certainly is like that, because there is a beaming going on. You do a simple and yet poignant prayer when you leave the harbor area, inviting in the highest intentions and spirits to guard and protect the experience. And, of course, beckoning the dolphins and whales to come and to exchange whatever they might with the people of part of that.
Right. Well, we offer a prayer to Akua, which is the source of all things, and we call on our Amakua, which are the whales and the dolphins, to come and play with us that day if it's their choice, and it's always their choice, as you know. And we've had some very remarkable experiences, which you've been part of many of them.
It's been my pleasure to be out there, and you never know. This is the amazing thing, because, you know, it's a vast ocean out there, thousands and thousands of miles, hundreds of miles of coastline. The dolphins could appear at any place. They do have sort of, you might say, routine patterns that we can identify. They go out and feed every night. Sometimes they'll meet in the thousands, several, 10 or 12 miles offshore, do a couple of cycles into the shore. In the daytime, they come in and start to file off into smaller numbers into the protected bays, and they go into what we call the rest period of time. dolphins don't sleep like humans, so they go into what is the equivalent of a meditative state. And we can hook up with them at any time during these journeys. Often we will find them as they're moving swiftly down the coast, sometimes hundreds of them at a time. And we slip into the water at pre-designated times. And there's kind of a protocol that we follow when we do this. Maybe you can describe what you do with your passengers when you put them in a position to be with the dolphins. And my point before we get to there, though, is that there's nothing predictable. We don't know that they're going to be at any one place. And when they do come, we don't know what the behavior is going to be. They could be lively. They could be in our face. They could be very quiet. And we have to be able to be humble enough to accept whatever we get, even if it's no visual sightings, just to know that they're there and we're there cooking in their soup, so to speak. So then, for them to show up on your wedding day at a preordained time is more than special. This is spontaneous beyond all synchronicities.
Well, on that particular day, because then as the sun starts to go down, all the dolphins on this side of the coast, they do meet up together in that super pod, 1,000 or more, as you say, and they go offshore, and they feed offshore all night long. And so when they come in the morning, they come into the shallow bays and the areas to rest and to play. And you mentioned that dolphins don't sleep like we do, and I think it's fascinating how they do sleep. And for those of you who don't know, you and I are unconscious breathers. So we go to lay down at night and we go to sleep and we continue to breathe. Dolphins, on the other hand, have to consciously come up for air to breathe. So how do they sleep? Well, they have the most unique ability of being able to shut down one side of their brain at a time. So they'll shut down that side and then they'll go into their rest pattern, their rest mode, and we can always tell when they're in that by their movements and how slow they go. And so they'll wake up that side after it's fully rested, and then the other side will go to sleep. And when you're in the water with the dolphins, you can always tell which side is asleep because the eye is closed on that side.
It was noted by a couple of researchers that often dolphins will pair up, and they will swim side by side with the two sleeping sides inside and the two awake sides on the outside. That way they've got everything going on, and they're still getting the rest at the same time. Now, there's a real exercise in partnership behavior and cooperation, isn't it?
Well, that pod mentality is one of the teachings and the gifts that the dolphins bring to us, because the whole pod acts as one. So everything is for the good of the pod, and we have a lot to learn. They teach us about love and joy and how to get along and interact and be part of the whole.
Unconditional joy being the supreme lesson that we seem to come away with. It's an intangible. It's almost a non-linear way of thinking when you talk about unconditional anything. But unconditional love is a wave frequency, a high energy frequency. It's not limited. It is without limits. It's not about conditions because it is unconditional. And yet it is an open flow that we can all palpably feel and have something to come away with. It's amazing.
Well, it is amazing. And each interaction is different out there, as you said, and every day is different out there with them. And they meet you where you are. So you take what they give you, and we go. You don't even have to get into the water with dolphins to connect. And as you well know, I don't have to be in the water to connect. You know, you and Michael are like fish. You know, you need to be in there with them. So they like to have be in the soup with them. But you do not have to do that. You get from the boat. I have some of the most amazing interactions with them from the boat, actually. So they are very wonderful, beautiful beings to watch. They move so gracefully, and it's not uncommon at the end of a trip to just find yourself sort of zoned out, and we lovingly call that dolphin bliss.
And we've all felt that, and some of us who even haven't had the experience can identify with a certain level of ecstasy that's associated with a high, high spiritual feeling. Well, it started out as primarily family of the dolphins, and your experiences were going out on the boats and having dolphin exchanges, but then slowly you started to get some very powerful exchanges with the whales. And I recall a couple of years ago, the whales were coming over to the boat as if they were invited guests. What happened that first time out that really seemed to set a precedent for the things that followed? What happened that day?
Well, that was probably 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when the whales themselves started becoming much, much more interactive with us. And as you say, just coming over to the boat and just playing and being there and just taking us right into their energy. And I think that is another testimony to our raising our consciousness. I think we are ready for that energy. The energy between the dolphins and the whales is very, very different. The dolphins is light and playful and joyful, and the whales is ancient and old, and it's very wise, and it's very deep. So there's a whole different element there, and I think we have finally reached the point as humanity where we have come to that place where we can connect with the whales, and they can connect with us on that level, because as they have been the guardians of the secrets, you know, they think it's time for us to step up and say, hey, we're ready to take stewardship of this planet.
Mm-hmm. Seems to be some indication that that's what's happening, and the whales have initiated a few of us, and more as the time goes on. I had just returned from a trip to the Dominican Republic 2 years ago, where I had the opportunity to slip into the water and swim eye to eye with some of the humpback whales down there as part of a research facility and ship that goes out. But what was happening when I came back and went on your boat one morning, we were out, and there was three whales that came right by and underneath the boat. We were standing on the bow. They came within inches of the boat, acknowledging us on so many levels. It was unmistakable that they were knowing that we knew that they knew. And that was really a transitional time, I felt, for all of us.
It was. They took us right into their energy. And it's also, you have to remember that we believe the water here, the ocean here, is the most healing place on the planet, the most healing water on the planet. So when you blend the energies of the whales or the dolphins with the consciousness of the water or with the wind, the Makani winds, I mean, it's quite a powerful coming together of magical forces.
Mm-hmm. Have you witnessed, I'm sure you have, but any interesting anecdotal stories that you might be able to share about people having experiences that pop to mind?
Gosh, there's so many. It's just very hard to know. But I will share with you just a personal story about the dolphins. Anytime you're out with the dolphins, it's an awesome experience, no matter what the interaction is, no matter how they connect with you. There are some times, though, when they literally will take you right into their pod. I mean, you become one with them. And I am not a really strong swimmer, and dolphins can swim very fast if you've never been in the water with them. So there are times when they have actually taken me into their midst, and I've been surrounded by them, and it's almost as if I have been going 100 miles an hour in the water with no effort whatsoever. And they just take me on, and that's something that's happened just maybe 5 or 6 times over all the years. But it's very distinct and very phenomenal. And there have been 3 or 4 occasions when the dolphins' energy was such, again, when they came and they were just eye to eye with me, I was surrounded by them, and I knew by their energy that they were preparing me for something. And each time I've had that experience and I've been aware of that energy, something significant has happened in my life within 2 weeks.
Mm. On dry land, so to speak.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so they kind of like were precursors. They were letting you know energetically that a wave of change was coming.
Exactly.
Well, now you've trained yourself to be a sensitive. And in fact, you work with Reiki energy, and you've done that as part of your practice for, you know, a number of years now. Do you find that this assists you in opening up to the dolphin experience?
Of course. I work as a spiritual counselor, as a spiritual intuitive, and it's just one more aspect of it to relate with them on that level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, the dolphin and the whale energy is very much different in how they interact and how they speak to me, let's put it that way. It's where the dolphins, it's almost like I hear them in my head. The whales are totally different. I don't hear them, per se. It's hard to explain. It's like you absorb their energy with all of your being. And only now, and I've noticed this past season with them, am I beginning to almost hear the words again with them. And before, I didn't hear the words at all with the whales. And it's because the difference in the energy is so distinct, and it's just a different level of energy.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we know, words, we can equate as a linear construct. We use them as a binary code to describe things mentally to the world around us. And, of course, it's taken over our lives and become a ruler. And what we're being shown now, and part of the things we touched on at the beginning of the show, is part of the shift in human consciousness is away from purely mental descriptions and mental meanderings and constructs of the world and accessing the heart mind, another way of accessing the information that's there. To me, the dolphins and the whales actually represent a feminine heart opening or heart-based intelligence system that is not connected to the mental, although it has inroads to the mental. So the dolphins give us mental constructs, but the whales seem to blow all of that out with just a heart mind.
Well, as all of us tend to be more, some of us are clairaudient, which means we hear. Some of us are clairvoyant, which means we see. Some of us are clairsentient, which means we feel. And so I'm all of those things, and I never know which one or how the information from anyone, whether it be the whales or the dolphins or any of the ancestors that speak to me, how it's going to come. But it's always been so distinctly different with the whales. And as I say, just only this past this season do I feel like I can almost hear the whales, you know, which is something I haven't been able to have happen before.
Yes, we have technology here on Big Island. That was technology on the spiritual levels and in the physical levels that seem to be affecting us all. So I know a lot of people report having dream time experiences or a way of accessing that kind of mentality of another sentient species. Dr. Lilly described it as being the closest thing that we have on a physical sense to what it might be like to encounter a total alien or extraterrestrial. In fact, he even referred to them as extraterrestrials, not being of the land. Has your experience kind of verified that and what you've seen of other people, that it's that it affects people that way?
Well, I think it does to a degree. I think the whales and the dolphins are very connected with what we're now calling the crystal children. And I think they have the ability to connect with them and communicate with them in a way that most of us older, elder indigos do not. I feel like, you remember the experience we had about a year ago when we took out some children and some very special children out on the boat. And
this was the Jimmy Twyman Psychic Children's Conference, and we sponsored a boat to take the special children out.
Well, about a month before we took them out, we had, about 12 or 14 of the children that we were taking out. One night about 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up, and they were all in my bedroom with the whales and the dolphins. And the whales and the dolphins were telling me exactly who these children were. And those of us who work with the whales and the dolphins on almost daily basis, you know, we kind of felt like we were the ones that they were passing the torch to. But the whales and the dolphins clarified that very quickly. We are the bridge. We're the rainbow bridge to these children. And these children are where the torch is being passed. And they will take over the true stewardship of this planet. So watch your children.
We've heard that, and I think that's a big lesson as we're putting more energy into the children. Children are reflecting back some profound things. Mm-hmm. Now, the crystal children, we'll talk a little bit more about that as we get into some of the material that we'll be sharing with Steve Rother's group. But before we do, I still want to be able to talk a little bit more about the foundation, the spiritual organization, Kaiohana Onaya. You've gone through a couple of boats now. This new boat is a wonderful 30-foot, great craft.
Speed machine.
Yeah, and it allows you to get out and yet be unintrusive. I swear that the dolphins and whales know the boat. They know the sound of the motor. They know the presence of the people, because it seems almost invariably when we've been out, and I go out on a lot of different boats into the same territory day after day, and there is something very special about the energy and the level of communication that you seem to establish with both the whales and the dolphins. How do you explain that, or is it that you just, it's another verification that this is where you're supposed to be?
Well, I think it's that, but I think it's... we like to feel what we do out there is unique and different from what most other people are doing out there, because for us it is truly a spiritual experience. You know, we're not out there just having a lark and having a good time. It is truly a profound experience, and we want to project it as such.
Plus, we have a good time, too.
And we do that, too.
Yeah, there's something that you cannot not smile when you've gone into that experience. Well, a couple of years ago, we had I was part of a journey where we went out and we had an incredible event happen around the boat. And there was a couple that I brought along with me who, as it turned out, were connected with the Steve Rother organization known as the Lightworkers. And one thing led to another, but it started with that day. Maybe you can tell your side of that story because it was a pretty amazing day.
Well, of course, as all of you know, there are no accidents. So here we were, we met these two people, and it was just like instant recognition. You know, it was like we had known each other forever. So we got talking, and they said, oh, I'm a Reiki master. Oh, you're a Reiki master. We do this and we do that. And they said, oh, and have you ever heard of Lightworker? I'm the Lightworker lawyer, and she's on the board of directors for Lightworker. And I've been following Steve Rother and the group, which is lightworker.com, for 5 or 6 years, or maybe probably 4 or 5 years at that time. And so we were talking to you. So I said, you know, I've always wondered what it would take to get them to come to Hawaii to do a seminar. So David pulled out a cell phone, dialed the number, and said, here, ask. They've just been waiting to be asked. And so it happened just that quickly and that easily.
2 years ago.
Right. And so we had our first event last year in March, and it was phenomenal. They started presenting the Overlight series here in Hawaii, and that was Overlight 1 at the foundational level. And starting on the 04-04-04 this year will be Overlight 2. And so we're thrilled to be hosting them and welcoming them back home and having the spiritual family come from all over the world. I mean, it was phenomenal, just the energy. And we have 80 wonderful beings going to join us this year, and it's going to be awesome.
Maybe even more. Well, I know there's a lot of spiritual disciplines out there. You talked about learning from the Avalon Institute, and they presented a variety of tools and exercises. How does Steve Rother's work differ or is similar to those?
Well, you know, this, as the group says, or as Steve says, there's many flavors of the truth, but it's only one truth. So no matter how you get there, you wind up in the same place. What I love most about the group is their energy is totally about remembering who you are.
Now, you're talking about the group. This is actually a group of entities that are channeled by Steve Rother. Is that
right.
Correct?
Right, and they're actually like archangels. They call themselves the family of Michael. We know the Michael they're talking about. And so it's very empowering. It's very uplifting. And no matter what the topic or what they're talking about, it's always to help you remember who you are and to remember home. And it's just so beautiful. And it's something that has meant a lot to me in my life. I consider them my teachers as well, and as along with many others. And we have many teachers. Some are physical and some are non-physical. And mm-hmm. And the group is about as gentle a group of beings as you ever will encounter.
Well, the demand for his time is increased dramatically over the last few years, and he does travel all over the world and meets with thousands of people who want to tune in to the information being provided by this very clear channel, the group.
Well, and Steve Rother is a very clear channel, and he is, I know a lot of channels, and there's a lot of wonderful information coming out there, but he is about as clear as any channel that I've ever met. He is one of the group, so he blends, and they blend with him just very beautifully, and it's very clean.
Very clean and very clear channel of information.
Exactly, and the Overlight, there's a different topic every year, and this year our topic is on transition teams. And the group has said this will become some of the most powerful work to be done on the planet. And it's to assist others as they're getting ready to make their transition to the other side. They're going home. And also to work with the families. And there's another aspect of that works with the new coming souls, the new crystal children coming in, mm-hmm. perhaps.
Yeah, well, we've talked about that line that separates the material and non-material, physical, non-physical. What happens after we move beyond one realm into the other? Hawaiians have a saying, changing addresses.
Exactly.
And you have furthered your studies not only from with the Steve Rother Group, but you've also furthered your studies with the Hawaiian traditions as well. And you've gone through new kapunas and continue to elaborate that. Is that correct?
Right. I've been studying with Mehalani O'Henry, and she's a wonderful teacher, and she talks about Ho'oponopono, which is the right way to do things, and she is of a very ancient lineage that can trace their roots way, way, way back, pre-Ali'i, that's before the Ali'i came from Tahiti, and certainly before pre-Christian, and it's very pure, and it's the Hawaiian spirituality has changed, you know, over the years as when the Ali'i came, and as, of course, when the missionaries came. And her line goes way back, and when she talks and she begins talking about her kapunas and what she was taught from them, I can see the line from that pure Lemurian days, from those traditions. And it's one of the things I love most, and hopefully I think she's going to join us for part of our gathering next week with the Steve Rother Group. We're actually going to be doing a Lemurian initiation on one of our days.
Well, I want to get in more details about the Lemurian initiation, because you're doing that for a number of, well, many of the people that are coming to this, and it's something that you've integrated as part of your new presentations to the group. But first, let us take another little break here, tune in some more music from The Calling, and this is a chant that, well, just a feeling of what it's going to be like to be in these nether regions, somewhere between the worlds. So we'll welcome you back after a few minutes. For now, The Calling. Listening to the words of Malena, who has been sharing some of the stories about the family of the dolphin.org. It's a place that we all kind of like tie into, the Cetacean Nation. There is a sentient race of beings that has been on the planet for millions of years, and they have incredible abilities to be perceptive of the world around them. They've been stewards of higher frequencies of information for eons of time, and they're here to help us if we so open ourselves to it. They have profound ways of thinking and imagining the way we are that they can help share with us. The first thing we have to do is to acknowledge that there is that out there. Secondly, you have to kind of like be quiet inside yourself and allow them to start to talk to you. These are kind of exercises that we do in various ways. Those of us who have felt so moved to be able to share this experience, ask people to go into various states, altered states. Usually when you enter the water, that's an altered state. When you're staring at the dolphins in the water, again, that's another shift in your consciousness. And when you start to let go of the rigid, limited ways of thinking that has been passed down as part of our cultural programming and allow nature to start speaking to you, the most profound thing that happens is that you begin to open up your own awareness to yourself and you begin to see the world differently. You begin to honor yourself. And that is sort of one of the tenets of the ancient Lemurians, as we're beginning to learn. And we're bringing back some of their mentality and their sensibilities back to the planet at this time, because it is time to reinvest that way of thinking, because we are ready to move into another level of being, another level of thinking. So welcome back, Milena, to Dolphinville.com Radio, brought to you by, as a host, Photon.net. Photon.net is an internet service provider and has a whole range of services. In fact, our websites are being put up and hosted by Photon.net. It also offers e-commerce, and these broadcasts are being done, so multimedia broadcasts and a variety of different things such as virtual tour technology that is being developed and offered to the web at large. So thank you, Randy, and the team at Photon for being so generous with your time and believing that there's new information that to be shared out through the internet using technology for the betterment and the release of this cool kinds of stuff. So welcome back, Milena.
Thank you.
We're talking about the Lemurian initiation and how that's become a part of your world and how you're going to be sharing what is called the Lemurian initiation with the Steve Rother group. How will that work and what does it look like?
It's a blend of a lot of things. If you were to come to us and spend a week with us, and we would introduce you, of course, to the whales and the dolphins. And of course, and the whales are not here all year round, but the dolphins are. And also, it would include going to do some land journeys, like into the rainforest or to the volcano to meet Madame Pele. And all of those things start immersing you in the energy of Lemuria. And with the group coming on the 0404, we're going to have one day as part of the seminar where we're actually going to do some profound ceremony, and we're going to really work with the Lemurian energy. So it's, I can't say too much about that because...
Oh, come on. We want to know.
Because it's secret. Because some of our people coming maybe listen to this broadcast, and so we wanted to everybody to kind of enter into it without any preconceived ideas of what it's going to be.
But well, that's an important thing that we often ask people going out on the boats. We know that we're going to go out into the ocean. We know there's a good opportunity of encountering the cetaceans and having an experience. And yet we say, listen, rather than having a preset bunch of expectations, don't let them get in the way of something that could be very profound and spontaneous. How do you stimulate that atmosphere? By just keeping it secret? Or you have kind of a framework, I know.
Well, it's a framework, but it's the premise is just immersing everyone into the energies of Lemuria, and we're going to work directly with that portal that's sitting up there waiting to be open. So wherever you are on April 7th, keep your antenna up and open, and see if you can tap into a new wave of energy that we're going to be connecting with.
You already see that coming, another doorway of opportunity. And I think we know energetically that when you open up your consciousness and you connect to the universe and all that is in a certain way, you're really forging a trail for others to follow. So as you make it so, so it is with others as well. So this ritual or this is planned so that it's an opening for others that will enjoy later, right?
Exactly, and part of what will happen during our time will be to connect with those of you out there who are ready and open to the experience. And the only thing you have to do is open your heart center and just enjoy
so
the current.
So aside from the Rother group that you're going to be doing this with, you do it with others on an individual basis and a smaller scale as well.
Right. And we'll actually have it up on the website soon where we'll be offering just several, like 5-day journeys to return to Lemuria.
Well, I'm sure that since you've been around the island and you know some several sacred sites, there are some special places that you've taken people, not only to go into the rainforest and to go to Madame Pele. Those are the obvious ones, but you've gone to the mountains of Mauna Kea, and you've gone to seashore areas and of old heiaus and connected people up with that. That's all part of the kind of like the whole pantheon of experience that you offer people.
It is, and the energies vary so much from place to place, and it's so we'll design a journey specifically for you and where you are and what you're looking for.
Mm. Let's get back to more of Steve Rother. I know that this is kind of a closed thing, but he is offering a public interface for anybody who's on the island on April 6th. Isn't there a public event that he's offering?
Right. On the evening of April 6th, between 8 and 10, we will have an open house, and that's open to the local community to come and meet and say hello, and he'll do some type of presentation, maybe a question-answer session. He probably won't decide until an hour before time exactly what it'll be, mm-hmm. and but it'll be a great time. The seminar, you have to be a participant of the seminar to partake of any of those things, but we do have still have a few spaces open if anyone's interested. Mm-hmm. They can go to the lightworker.com website or our familyofthedolphin.org, and there's a link there, and you can contact me if you think you can make it or you're interested in doing so.
Once again, that's lightworkers.com.
Lightworker.
Lightworker singular, but family of the dolphins, plural.org. So single lightworkers, plural dolphins. And that'll give you some more information about this upcoming seminar, which begins next week with Steve Rother's group, the Lightworker group. And it's about transition teams, what's happening between the worlds, and helping people who are sensitives to look at some of the issues that are surrounding us. And we've been hearing various information about this for a number of years. When I first came to Hawaii to participate in one of Joan Ocean's seminars, she was using the work, a lot of the work from the Monroe Institute.
Uh-huh.
The Monroe Institute, for those of you who don't know, is pretty well known nowadays as using sound frequencies to help open up consciousness and get us into a very, very deep, profound meditative state that has been coined hemispheric synchronization, whole brain thinking. We know that the dolphins do this naturally when we're in the water with them or even in the surrounding area, because their wave frequencies travel both in the water and out of the water. In the water, it's conducted with more density and more intensity, and then people feel it very, very palpably. What is part of the euphoria that happens is that our body comes into a state of balance and harmony with itself, maybe for the first time in so many years. Usually before we're 7 years old, we're in a natural state of balance. We're using all of our facilities, and we haven't started to divide the world into right and left hemispheric thinking, or we haven't been directed to do so by the cultural programming that's around us. So, in a way, we go back to our childhood thinking, and we're able to think holistically. But during that period of time, the Monroe talked about training people to, first of all, be perceptive of the non-physical realms, that we would find our own guidance with entities on the other side who were non-physical. Sometimes they would take the guys as beloveds who have passed on, or ascended masters who had maybe walked the earth that we had known about, and we would be able to identify them by their presence and their light frequencies. And then a host of others who might be considered in the angelic realms, or even further, non-dimensional or other ultra-dimensional beings. Have you had personal experiences with these kinds of entities, and how would this workshop address those kinds of issues?
Well, the workshop is not so much about the other entities as to working with the transitioning spirit as it's going to the other side. Because, as you know, in Western culture, there's a lot of fear around death. And so the workshop is to, we're all going to face it. We're going to all go through it, as will our families and our friends. And it's just to give us some tools to support those that we love on their transition. And, you know, I mean, yes, there is that other realm, but the workshop itself is not, you know, focused on that. It's to working with the soul as they're transitioning, and then to help the families that remain behind to deal with it and maybe look at it from a little bit different perspective. Because we look like, oh, why did this happen to me, or why did that happen to them? And you know, no one leaves a minute before they're supposed to. Their journey here is done. You know, they're ready to go home. And it should be a time of celebration, whereas it's a time that we resist and, you know, we have so much fear. So we're hoping by this work and by the transition teams forming all over the planet that we can ease that transition for others and particularly help the families. That's a hard thing. You know, the soul that's going on, once they pass over, they're in the light, they're home. You know, and it's those that are left behind that really have the challenge. And there's a lot of stages to that and the grief stages and what happens to people. And you know, it was a tragic event in my own life that made me start my journey and question why we were here and who we are. And I had to throw basically everything away because there wasn't a lot of support to give me the answers I needed. Nothing I had ever been taught in the religious background that I grew up in and my family surroundings gave me any peace. And so I started my journey trying to find some peace, and it ultimately led me just be sitting here talking to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think all of us have some part of us that causes us to move forward, seeking out some level of balance, and I would like to think a level of happiness, which is the equivalent of peace on another level, where you feel that you have attained something. We have such a small, relatively small period of time to go through a life cycle here. I often thought that it was rather arrogant of us to think that we only had one of those to go around and learn everything there was to know about being a human being in this time and space. So it made much more sense to adopt another model. But we're seeing paradigms or belief systems that are lining up, one stacked onto another, that are all coming up for question now. It seems like part of the transition is to question all of those belief systems that have held us in place for so long.
Right, and transitions encompasses even more than transitioning from this dimension to another one. I mean, we go through transmissions and transformations all along through our lives, and there's some major turning points in our lives, and I think the same tools and rules will apply no matter what kind of transition that we're facing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the ocean is a great metaphor for transition, going from the warm air into the wet water. And the water itself could be compared to the vastness of spirit and us letting go of the restraints of gravity, which we think we have some semblance of control over because gravity seems consistent to us, and we know that if we throw something up, it'll fall down. But all those rules change when you get off of the shore and start to float into the vast ocean. So a lot of our work on a subconscious or maybe unconscious level is help people to transition away from gravity limitations and ways of thinking into a more free, liquid way of being.
Right, and as you know, it's a very healing environment out there. You know, we call it the liquid crystal vibration.
Liquid crystal, yes. And the crystal children coming in now. Now, this is a term, crystal children, that's been used by Steve Rother and Leo Carroll to describe the new children.
Actually, the group was the very first to introduce the term crystal children probably 6 or 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they foretold it was coming a long, long time ago.
Mm-hmm. I listened on the radio show that they present on their website, lightworker.com. He shares some of his channeling. And it was the first time I'd ever personally had a chance to listen to his message. It is very dynamic, and it is quite different than his normal speaking tone, where he sounds like you or I just having a conversation, and then he steps into this higher self or higher positioning.
Well, he and they both, the group, consider him, Steve, as one of the group, and there are 9 of them.
Nine. We've heard that one before.
Yes. But, you know, there's various uses of the word nine, and I think there are different nines, and, you know, there's different. But you mentioned Lee Carroll, who, of course, channels Kryon. And for those of you who are interested, particularly those who live in the Hawaiian Islands, on this coming Monday, I believe, and you can check the time and the link on the lightworker.com website, but on Monday afternoon, I think at 4, Lee Carroll, Steve Rother, and Reverend Fred Sterling, who has the Honolulu Church of Light, will be doing a radio broadcast altogether.
Yeah, that's when we're broadcasting also.
Oh, it's
that's
like
right
that.
Now. That's happening right now, folks. You're allowed to switch channels, but be sure to come back here. So that is happening right now on lightworker.com. It's part of their thing. But that's okay. It's all about the same information. Mm-hmm. This particular radio show will be archived, so that if you do want to flip channels, you're entirely welcome to do so and come on back. And
I believe that one is archived as well.
Mm-hmm. So these will be things that we'll be able to hear. The information is all about the same thing. We're not parsing it off here, and I have a little section and you have a little section. It's kind of a holographic thing, whereas we join our pieces together, a larger picture becomes available to us. So talking about changes, though, people going through transitions throughout their whole life, not only at the end of the life, but throughout the course of a life. And there was a friend of yours who you're either co-sponsored a concert that she's giving, who's gone through several changes, and she's translated that into her music. Why don't you tell us a little bit about her? And she has a concert coming up here in April as well, right?
Right. Her name is Simone Owina, and she's actually from Holland. And she is going to be part of our conference with Steve Rother. But she's going to stay on and do a concert here locally in Kona. And it's going to be at the Kona Outdoor Circle on April 17th. And it's between
6:30 to 8:30.
And it's $15 at the door if anybody would like to come and hear her sing. And her concert is about her own personal journey. Her fiancé, he transitioned over a few years ago. And it was about her journey through her pain, her suffering, until the joy that she now has found in her life. And so it should be...
It's about the journey.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And part of the joy that we've been able to share with people is the journeys that we go out and we bring these experiences. And it's something that we hopefully will be able to expand on, more and more people who are ready for this experience. What do you see in your work with Rother and others, and you're constantly renewing, as what's unfolding here in the immediate and not too distant future for what's coming in informationally and spiritually as well as physically?
I think you better hold on to your collective butts. I think it's the doors are ready to burst open. I think we're right at that pivot point. And it's always up to us. I mean, we have choice until that very last second of which way we're going to go. But the potential is there that we're going into a realm that we have never seen before. And I, for one, am very, very excited about where we're headed. And you can feel the energy. You know, it's there. It's mm-hmm. here. And so we ask all of you who are of like mind and like heart just to open your heart portals and go with us, because we're in the flow. And I think the last message the group gave out was called the, last month was called the Crystal Portals. So it's all here.
I don't think I've heard that particular message. One of the amazing things when I heard one of the broadcasts was that after the channeled message, Stephen came back on in his regular voice, and he was sort of commenting on what was said, and with some bit of surprise, I'll be interested to hear more about walking backwards in time and learn more about what the nine share. So he doesn't know what he's saying, basically, but it's also clear.
No, he doesn't always know what they're going to talk about. He's sometimes as surprised as we are, but the one about walking backwards in time, I know you found that one to your liking. And it's a very interesting concept to walk back in time as you're also going forward. And you, Douglas and I have had some discussions about that and what the implications of that are. And for me, it's we are moving forward, but we're also having an opportunity to look at some doors, the way the group put it, that were there as we went the first time past, but because of where we were in our own evolution, we're not able to see. And now we have an opportunity to maybe open those doors. But we're still moving forward as we're exactly walking back in time. So we get to see where we've been from a whole other perspective, from our now perspective. Whereas when we were in it or there, say 2 years ago, hopefully we've grown and evolved enough that now when we can go back and look at it, we can see with new eyes.
Well, these are all new territories for people to explore.
Oh, we're pushing the edge of the envelope for sure.
Mm-hmm. And it's high time, because we're in a hypercritical state. And maybe the human condition is like that, where we we keep testing and testing and going right to the very edge of our capabilities, our backs against the wall, the 11th hour to decide whether we're going to continue on as a species on this physical plane or not. And maybe that's when, you know, the chips are all down, as they say, and any decisions we make really have the full part of our attention.
Well, we are at that critical point where we've been given everything we need to remember who we are. So now it's a matter of conscious choice. Will we step up to the plate or will we just choose to stay? And as we go into the Lemurian initiations or whatever particular path you're on, it's time. And because the Lemurian energy is one that I'm very much connected to, what I'd like to say to anyone else who is connected to that energy is, you know, we are the ancient children of Lemuria. We are here. We have come home.
Mm-hmm. And we're remembering
exactly
who we are. That's amazing. Well, let's take another little break in time here and come back and wrap the show up with some more insights about the dolphin experience. We've been listening to this show with the album of The Calling from Rafael Quintero, and it's something that we hold so dear to our heart because it reminds us of being out in the ocean. So we're going to continue with some more sounds from that album, and we'll be back after a brief interlude here and talk more with Milena and the family of the dolphins. Rafael Gutierrez album, and being here with Milena Grace and the family of the dolphins and chirping geckos and wonderful Hawaiian sensibility here. We've been kind of covering the territory of what it's been like to share time and space with the dolphins and be part of the experience of the family of the dolphins. Ka'ahana Onaya is an organization, a spiritual organization, that is intended to invite people into the experience of recognizing the cetaceans as spiritual equals to humans on this planet, and that they have some profound information to share with us if only we would listen. So welcome back. We are here for the last half an hour or so with Milena. The Steve Rother Group is coming up next week, and there might be an opportunity to share more information about that afterwards, and hopefully Milena will come back and tell us how some of these things went. She's being rather secretive about the Lemurian initiation because she doesn't want to spoil it for people. Is there any other things that you might give us some hints at when it comes to the Lemurian initiation, or you pretty much said what you wanted to on that?
I think for now we've pretty much covered that. It's an energy that you will be able to feel. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I invite everyone to just kind of tune in on April 7th and just tap into our energy and go with us as we journey.
We know that there's power in prayer, collective thought, the pod mind, as we've talked about it. We were talking about a number of people who are going to be gathering together for this particular ceremony. There's going to be 80-odd people who are coming as part of the seminar and the people who are associated with them. So there's a lot of people who are focusing their attention together to come up with a new thought form, a new way of moving energy through through time and space. And this is a transitional time. The significance of 444, spirit number 444, can you share any more about that?
Well, if, for those of you who do follow Steve Rother in the group said over a year ago that the 040404 would be the time when all the portals would be accessible. So that's significant in and of itself. And just the power of the numbers, you know, is like we had the 333 and the 222. And, you know, it's the countdown. We're counting down to the Mayan calendar. And even though we feel as if we have greatly accelerated and sped things up, that we are only probably a few short years out from being in the energy that the Mayans predicted we would be in, we're still on that countdown. So next year we'll be here for the 555. Mm-hmm. And it will be just another phenomenal event, and we're just carrying that energy on and on and on.
And we're getting 12-12-12.
Right. I don't think it's going to take the 12-12-12, though. I think we're going to surpass that, I feel, a lot sooner than the 12-12-12. So 12-12-12, we're going to have a huge party in Hawaii, so everybody come.
I'm ready. December 12th, the Mayan calendar is supposedly the end of time as we know it, maybe the end of the way we understand time now, and transitioning. Do you see this as a mass movement, that everybody on the planet is going to be changing the way they think, or is it indeed more like what it has been, where you have a few forward thinkers, the vanguard, and then the masses follow behind that? How do you see this unfolding?
You'll always have your people on the cutting edge who are leading the way, who are forging the new path. But I do feel that more and more people are waking up and becoming conscious and are asking a whole lot more questions. Their path may not and probably will not take them on the same journey you and I have been on for the last 15 years or so, because they don't need to be, because we've already done that work for them. We've made it clear the path. So I think the consciousness of the planet is raising up, and I think that's testimony to where we are while we're at the threshold of being able to access these portals and these energies that we haven't been able to in the past. And I really feel like our Earth, if we choose collectively, is in for some radical changes for the positive. And I'm very excited about the potentialities of what's out there, because we're already in no man's land. We're where we've never been before. You know, the fifth dimension we've been in, we are clearly in it. And we're already beginning to move out of that, and we're already picking up energies from the sixth dimension. And we're going at such an unprecedented rate. By 2007, I think we will be where once was predicted we'd be by 2012.
So the timeline has been moved up on some energetic level. It's been predicted that there seems to be a split now in the way that there are two worlds, of one a material world and one a spiritual world, that seems to be superimposed over one another, that the followers of the material way, the mechanistic universe, are stalwarts and holding on to an old way of thought form and belief systems, and it's starting to drift apart. There's kind of like maybe a collective schizophrenia going on, where there are actually going to be a separation. Do you see that coming? It's been described as such.
Well, I understand that theory and have seen it read, but I see it a little bit differently because, see, there is no separation between your spiritual being and your physical being. We've only been led to believe that, and we do, and we have bought that. But it's all coming together because you are a spiritual being. Whether you believe it, whether you accept it, whether you own it or not, you are. And nothing can change that. And the true essence of each of us is that spiritual being. And so you have no choice. I see it blending. It's all about coming together. It's not about anything separating and coming apart. It's that we're all becoming one unified light force. And it's going to be a light that's going to shine throughout the cosmos. Mm.
There seems to be a lot of people waiting for it to shine from the inside and the outside in anticipation of that. And so do you think... sensitive people who are able to open up to these other realms of intelligence is going to become more and more commonplace so that, let's say, every person will be able to tune into their own guides or access that kind of information that has only been allowed to the initiates?
Well, I feel like everybody has that ability. You just have to wake up and accept that you do have it. You know, there's nothing mysterious about it. We're all born with those abilities. It's there for each of us. You're there.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of us have a tendency to have that cut off through whatever life's experiences, whatever choices that we've made on a personal level to accept or deny the existence of these other realms.
Well, the buzzword is ascension, and we are ascending. And it's not that we're going anywhere. You know, you don't ascend, it's not going, but we're bringing it all here. We're blending, we're merging with all that is. For me, that's the true meaning of ascension. It's not getting out of your body and going to another planet or getting in a starship and going off to, you know, where in the wild blue yonder. It's here. We came here to have a physical experience. You're already that spiritual being. You're already that perfected light. And so we're here trying to make a difference in the cosmos because we can.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that thought and the vibrational shift that we're experiencing will be enough to rectify some of the physical damage that apparently has happened to planet Gaia?
The planet was here long before we were and will be here long after we were. Mm. She's a powerful entity in and of herself, and she will be just fine.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that what we've done with reference to ourselves, we've kind of put ourselves in jeopardy by making our conditions rather hazardous. You think we can collectively turn that around and rectify the changes?
Well, of course. Mm-hmm. We have to be. You know, and we need the planet to survive. So if we don't take care of it, it's certainly not going to support us. She doesn't need us to survive. She'd probably be a lot healthier without us.
Well, that's been shown. Well, we're coming up on the latter part of the show now. You did agree that you might be able to share some insights from your own inner being and go into a space that might be able to bring out some new perspectives from Elena's standpoint, and go into a space that'll share some of that. You know, does that still feel right to you? Do you feel like you can do some of that with us?
Well, the message that I would have is very simple, and it's very short, and it is just simply to remember who you are. That's all the power you will ever need in that I am.
Well, that's a powerful phrase in and of itself. Kind of enlivens many, many doctrines going back to the mystery schools and some of the spiritual awakenings that we're all experiencing right now. I am the dolphin. I am Dolphin Us, which is my moniker. And IamDolphinUs.com is a website that enables me to express myself. And Dolphin Us is my own persona of that. I'm happy to be able to be a part of this. It's an unfolding in my own self, and I seem to be able to share that sensibility with more and more people, such as yourself. And part of our task here has not been to make a living. It's been living a making, and we've been able to maybe open up some realms for different people to experience an essential joy that is part of our birthright as being humans on this planet. And you're certainly a big part of that contribution.
As you are. And you are to be commended for your part because you've brought a lot of people together. And you give voice to a lot of people to connect, and it's doing a good job, Douglas.
Mm. Well, part of me hopefully is giving a voice not only to people but to the cetaceans themselves. They speak in volumes to me, most of which I can't even translate into words. But I think what we've shared a little bit about today is some of the personal experiences that have brought us into this way of thinking about who we are. Our task, is it a task? Our task, as the dolphins and whales have shown to me, is to simply be all that we are, and nothing more and nothing less. That's all that's being asked of us.
Exactly. We only have to be. We don't have to do anything. So it's not like you have to be on a certain path to do this, to do that. It's just be who you are, the true essence of who you are, and if you connect with that, that's what you came here to do.
Well, I fully agree with that, and I really appreciate your sharing that with us and your beautiful self. And Michael, who is here in spirit, he is somebody that brings, you know, just a tremendous amount of energy and well-being. Whenever I'm out with him, I always know that whatever will happen, he can take care of it. And so that's part of the experience too, because it is a vast unknown. The ocean represents something that can be quite threatening, and the power of the ocean is not to be underestimated. But I think also we've been brought along so that we can have this experience and not destroy ourselves. This is all part of a grand unfolding, and I think that you're certainly a part of it with the family of the dolphins, and you and Michael represent hopefully a new trend in the way that people are going to be thinking here.
Well, Michael, as you know, definitely is of the ocean, and he holds that energy, and he is that energy. So he's very powerful in his own way.
Mm. That's for sure. And you should see him surf.
Oh, my gosh.
We've had some opportunities to see him on the board, and that's an amazing thing. Well, thank you again, Milena, for this, and I thank you, the studio audience, for being with us and sharing in this adventure in time and space. We'll be back again next week with another guest, whoever that might be. We have yet to find out, but it'll be another member of the Dolphinville community, either in spirit or in physical. And be able to share some of these experiences as we go meandering on into the universe. Anything that you can share with the audience as a parting gesture, Milena?
Open your heart, be the love, be the light.
So simple and straightforward. Well, I thank you for listening, and thank you, Randy, and Photon.net. Thank you, listeners, who've been supportive of what's going on here. And we'll look forward to spending more time with you in the future shows. Once again, this is Dolphinus saying thanks again from Dolphinville. And as the dolphins said to me, be well and swim free. This is Dolphinus, and we'll see you again next time.